MacCast, Thursday, January 21st, 2016. Hey, Mac Geeks, it's time for your MacCast, the show for Mac Geeks by Mac Geeks. I'm Adam, and this is the show where we discuss all things Macintosh. How you doing? Welcome back to the MacCast. A little bit sooner than you would normally hear back from me after an episode. Put out an episode late last week, and here I am. It's Thursday as I'm putting this out, and you may be wondering, well, what's going on? Why are we getting a couple episodes a little closer together than normal? Actually, what's happening is I am going to be out of town for the next couple of days. And so I wanted to make sure that I got an episode out for you, and I don't think I'm going to be able to record one while I'm on the road. I just got a little too many things going on, basically. And so I thought what would be fun to do, since, you know, there hasn't been a lot of news since we talked last time, I thought, well, what better thing to do than to get the gang together, get the amigos together, and do another one of our amigos shows with Victor Cajiao, Ken Ray, and David Sparks. So I put out the call, I threw up the bat signal. We probably should have our own amigos signal. I don't know what that would look like. If you have an idea on that, let me know. Maybe even if you get so inspired and you happen to have artistic tendencies, maybe draw what an amigos signal would look like. Mac amigos or Apple amigos, I guess, would be. That could be interesting. So I look forward to seeing those. Post them on Twitter or something like that so we can share them with the community. And I'll try and retweet them and do all that kind of fun stuff. We'll get a little social media drive going for the amigos signal. Though apparently I have a hard time saying that. Okay. Anyway, it is going to be a fun show. This should be a lot of fun. Of course, before we get into all of it, I do need to take a quick moment and thank one of my show sponsors. And this week it is Smile. And they wanted me to tell you about PDF Pen. And that's really easy for me to do because I love PDF Pen. It is a Swiss Army knife of PDF foo. Yes, that's right. Swiss Army knife of PDF foo. It's that thing that we all have to deal with PDFs, right? PDF is like the format if you're exchanging documents these days. It's just what everybody uses. So you're getting PDFs. If you need to send something to somebody, they'll often request it in PDF format. It is just the document interchange format. And for all its awesomeness, one of the troubles is what happens if you need to modify or change or edit or do anything with that PDF? What are you going to do? Well, that's when you're going to reach for PDF Pen, because it will let you do editing. It will let you do highlighting, redacting. It will let you sign forms. It will let you take PDF documents that look like forms but aren't really forms and turn them into forms if you want. And you can do that. It's great for your paperless office, because when you bring stuff into PDF Pen Pro, you can have it OCR'd so that it is searchable. So you have completely indexed searchable PDFs, which is really, really handy when you're looking for that one PDF that's buried way deep down in your file system. You can export to Word from PDFs. So if you want to convert it into a Word document, you can do that. Add page numbering if it isn't there, and even the fancy Bates numbering. I don't even know what that is, but PDF Pen can do it. And you can even also then take those documents on the road if you get PDF Pen for iPhone or iPad. It is just awesome. You never have to print anything. You never have to fax anything. You can just deal with PDFs, editing, publishing, doing all of your stuff. And you can see what PDF Pen can do for you at smilesoftware.com/MacCast. It is a really powerful tool. Comes in two flavors. PDF Pen 7 will cost you just under $75 US, $74.95. And if you want to bump up to PDF Pen Pro, you can grab that for $124.95 US. And the difference between PDF Pen and Pro adds the ability to create those interactive PDF forms. It lets you create PDFs from websites. So if you want to archive some content that's on a website into a PDF, it makes that really nice and easy to do. It's also what allows you to do the exporting to Excel, PowerPoint, and PDF archive formats. And it's also it also adds the ability to do OCR text for proofreading and OCR of your scanned documents. And both PDF Pen 7 and PDF Pen Pro 7 are fully compatible with OS 10 El Capitan, and they require OS 10 Yosemite or later. And plus, while you're picking up your copy of PDF Pen at smilesoftware.com/Maccast, you can also check out Smile's other great apps like Text Expander, PDF Pen Scan Plus, Disk Label. I own all of them, and I owned all of them long before they became a sponsor. We just love Smile. They are a great developer in the Apple community, and you really should check them out. So smilesoftware.com/Maccast, and a big thank you to them for their continued support of the Maccast. So let's just get right into our conversation with the Amigos. We've got through a couple different topics. We're going to talk a little bit about what happens to your digital life and your digital data after you pass on. And we do it in a fun way, I hope. We're also going to talk about what's happening with iAd and Apple killing that off and how it may relate to some of the other things that Apple is working on. And then I asked the guys about what kind of cool stuff did they get recently over the holiday season. And I think we get into HomeKit a little bit as well. So it should be a good feature-packed show. I hope you enjoy it. Here is the Amigos. Here we are, another Amigos show. I got the gang back together, and the gang is all here. I'm excited about this episode. Hey, David Sparks, you're here, right?
I am. I'm here.
How you doing?
Great. Great, happy to be back on the Maccast.
Thanks for coming back. You guys are actually helping me out, and we'll talk. I'll mention that here in a little bit after we get through the introductions. Ken Ray from macOS. Ken, hey Ken.
Hey Adam, I'm thinking. I can't remember which of us coined the three amigos idea, but it was when there were three of us. But now there are four. I think we need to step up to musketeers.
That's what we talked. I think we mentioned that last time, right?
Did we? I don't know.
I got to stick with Amigos one more time. And again, I'll explain that here in a second, too. And then we also have our fourth man, Victor Cajiao. I guess Quattro.
Quattro, yes, that would be me. Hey, you guys, good to talk to all of you.
Good to have you guys all here. And now I had promised two things, and I forgot the first thing. But the second thing was... I was looking over the topics today, and we have two that have a death in it, and this will make more sense when we get into the topics. And so I thought, do we have to call this show Amigos de los Muertos?
Oh.
There you go.
But that's a little too morbid, I think.
A tiny bit.
The topics aren't that morbid. No, it should be fun. We got some good things to get into. Maybe we should start with those two topics. I had us kind of starting with iPhone stuff, but maybe get those out of the way, and then we'll move into some technology stuff.
I always prefer to talk about death at the beginning.
You want to rip off the Band-Aid right away.
Get that stuff out of
so, the way. Oh, I was going to talk about the Amigos versus the Four Musketeers thing.
Yes. Right?
Yeah, so we kind of covered that last time a little bit. But yeah, it's something to think about. I don't know. Here's the thing. Because people, and I'm sure you're going to send me feedback now that I'm mentioning it. And I don't mean you guys. I mean the audience. People don't like change. They really don't.
That's true. I don't like change.
Yeah. Because I brought it up on the show. The story goes, you know, that I do the Maccast. And when I started, 11 years ago,
yeah.
Apple really had the Mac. We didn't have iPhones and iPads, you know. And so I've thrown out the idea of, you know, should I change it to something more Apple related or open? Because we talk a lot more about iPhones and iPads and things. But no, all the feedback I always get, don't change it. Don't change the theme song. Don't change the taglines. People just don't seem to like that. So I think we should stick with Amigos probably.
Also, I think it's going to be pretty rare that all four of us are available on the day we do it.
Right. Yeah, this is rare.
Have we actually done it with all four of us before?
This may be the first one. And that was the other thing I promised I was going to mention. So part of the reason this show is happening, you guys are helping me out because this week I have a short week. I got to go out of town for something. So I just wanted to say thank you for agreeing to come on and help me out a little bit so I can get an episode in the can before I have to run off on a family thing.
Yeah. So, no, thanks for having us. Yeah.
All right. So the first thing that I wanted to bring up, and I don't want to dwell too much on the actual story. I want to get more to maybe some tips and tricks and hints and helps for people, is there was a story that broke this week. A woman had, husband, unfortunately, had passed away, and she needed to get access to, or wanted to get access to, his iTunes account. It sounds like part of the reason was there was a game that she liked to play that was under her husband's iTunes, but she did not have the password. So she went, I don't know if she went into an Apple store or called an Apple store. But regardless, she contacted Apple, and they told her that she needed to basically get a court order for them to deliver that information. And then they later came back and said, no, that was just a misunderstanding. You know, the death certificate, which I believe she had, is perfectly fine. And so basically she wanted to transfer the stuff from her husband's account into her account. You know, long story short. But really what that got me thinking about, and I know, and I'll try to put a link to this in the show notes at maccast.com. Over at Mac Roundtable, I think we covered this. People may or may not know, we had a friend several years ago, Tim Verporten, who did the Mac Review Cast, also was an original founding member of the Mac Roundtable podcast. He passed away, and a lot of these things came up. But in case people in my audience didn't hear that, I thought maybe this would be a good jumping off point to talk about maybe some of the things that we've done or haven't done or might want to do in sort of prepping for, again, sounds kind of morbid, but these are practical things that we probably don't think about and maybe should. You know, what happens when we, to our digital data, because so much of our lives are in digital data now when we move on.
I could totally see my wife, you know, like walking away from throwing my ashes into the ocean and saying, damn, I got to start all over again in Flappy Bird. You could just see it.
Yeah.
What have you done, Victor, for this stuff?
I've done a lot on this. When I had my heart scare several years ago, it was something that I had to literally think about. And so since then, we've had a couple of things in iOS, for example, the fingerprint availability there. So what I've done is in every iOS device I have, and my wife's as well, we've exchanged fingerprints. So two of her fingerprints are on all of my devices, two of my fingerprints on hers. So that way she has access to my device, something if something should happen. You know, along with that, of course, then we've exchanged 1Password passwords and put them in each other's safes. And so that's important. We also have a safety deposit box, and I have a paper copy of all of my passwords on there as well, along with, you know, important documents and things like this having to do with life insurance. So lastly, I've gone to both Google and Amazon, Amazon and Facebook, and taken advantage of their kind of unique way of how they handle it. They each have their own way of, you know, how to handle this. Google, I believe, if I just don't do anything in Google for 3 months, it'll automatically trigger an email to my wife saying, you know, what's going on here.
That's interesting. Yeah, I hadn't thought about some of the services and things like that. You know, the one thing that I have done with my wife, we've sat down. And I think the main starting point is just recognizing that this is maybe something that you want to talk to your spouse, your partner, your, you know, close friends, whoever is going to kind of take over this stuff, and make sure that you just have had the conversation about, hey, here's some things that you probably need to know. And you kind of start there and then build up from there. So really, with my wife, I probably have more to do, because I've sat down and we've kind of gone over the 1Password stuff, and I've showed her 1Password, and she has my password to get into things, and I've showed her how to like access all of the different stuff. But even that, I would imagine, you know, I've looked at it, I think I have over 2,000 passwords or bits of information in 1Password, and I imagine that could kind of be overwhelming. I don't even know if she'd know where to start, and I don't think we've had that conversation.
Are these all things upon which she relies? Forgive me for asking. Well, go ahead.
Yeah, no. So what I was going to say, and I think what kind of Victor was getting to with, you know, Google and Yahoo. You know, I have Google and Yahoo and Amazon and Netflix and all these other things. There's a lot of digital stuff spread out all over the internet that's left over, and does that stuff get shut down? Does she need to go do that? Or does it just live on and naturally die off at some point? I mean, what happens with all those digital footprints that we've left behind, or those digital accounts? You know, and some are probably more important to attend to than others. Another one that I haven't had a conversation with her about that's probably very important to the people who listen to my show is, what about Libsyn? You know, the archive of podcasts and Maccast.com and some of the domains that, you know, maybe people do want to continue. And I might want that legacy to continue to live on and be maintained. But does my wife have any interest in doing that? Maybe, maybe not. Maybe I need to find a different person who's willing to take on that job. I don't know.
You know, Adam, one thing I've done in that particular area, because there is so much of this stuff and it's so easy, you know, to forget, is I've kind of assigned, George Starcher have kind of assigned each other that role, mm-hmm. that if something should happen, you know, my wife knows to go to him and, you know, he'll help her navigate through something that maybe she doesn't understand, you know, like the where the audio files are or something like that. The one thing I haven't done that I need to do is kind of maybe once a year take inventory of my physical assets, you know, my audio gear and my instruments, things that she would have no idea what they're worth if I were to, you know, die and she wanted to sell them, you know, and it would be good to give her kind of an idea, hey, you know, at this moment in time, you know, this audio interface is worth this, or, you know, no, never sell my alto saxophone, no matter what you do, that kind of a thing.
Right. And this was something that when, you know, Tim passed, his wife was really overwhelmed with a lot of the physical stuff. And luckily, some folks at the Mac Roundtable podcast stepped up and really led by, I think, Allison Sheridan, who deserves a lot of the credit, to help her sort through, you know, like, yeah, you can throw away all those SCSI cables, you know, because she didn't even know what a lot of the stuff was, right? It's just like, is this junk? Is this worth something? I don't want to just, you know, give away or toss something that has value. You know, I want to see it go to somebody, or I want to be able to sell it, or, you know, all these things. And it's amazing when I, you know, I'm sitting in my office taking inventory and it's just like, my wife would just be overwhelmed. And it's not at a point when you want that person, you know, a loved person in your life to have to be more overwhelmed.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the middle of you guys. I have, my wife is a user of 1Password. I mean, she uses it every day. And although I'm the one who kind of pays a lot of the bills and stuff, so what I've done is I've made a 1Password entry for her that is my 1Password password, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And so she knows how to use it, but I've also told her, actually I've given her, because Adam and Victor happen to live close to me, I've said, look, you know, if the bus with my name on it comes down the street, call Adam and Victor and you know, hopefully you guys take care of yourself because I need you to be around. And you know, if you sat down with her for 2 or 3 hours, I'm pretty sure she'd be able to work out, you know, what to deal with the, you know, the Mac Sparky assets and the, you know, iTunes and all that stuff. But the, but yeah, I haven't really planned as great a detail as Victor has. But you know, I've done a little bit.
Yeah, Victor, sounds like you're further along. And the getting back to the one thing that I wanted to ask you about, and I haven't looked into, but you're right. I think there's a lot of companies, you know, that run websites, especially the bigger ones, Flickr, Google, Amazon. A lot of these companies, and I'm throwing out names. I don't know if they all have policies, but I do think a lot of them do have sections of their website where you can kind of pre-set up, hey, this is what I want to have happen to my account should I pass. And I don't know how those systems work because I've never looked into them. So Victor, is it the kind of thing where you set up, you know, you assign a person with another Google account as like executor and it's like, okay, this person is allowed to transfer, you know, my stuff to them? Or yes. I would imagine it's different for each service, but
it is different. And in Google's case, it is kind of an executive type thing. Facebook gives you a couple of different choices. You can just simply have the account go dormant. If you know, you can. So there's a lot of flexibility depending on the service that you have. And you guys, you're right. I'm more prepared. Again, there were two things that happened when my father-in-law died. There were some assets out there that we had to go after Facebook and that kind of a thing. And we were kind of at a loss. So that triggered me doing it. And then again, the health scare that I had kind of prepares you and puts you in that mindset where you think about things you don't normally want to think about, you know? So,
yeah.
May I ask, what's the desire to get everything what's the Facebook issue? I've got a friend who died, acquaintance, who died about a year and a half ago. And Facebook will still tell me what his birthday is. And people still go there. I mean, he had sort of this weird disparate community that was all people from different walks of life from all over the place. And people still go to his website and post. I mean, not his website, his Facebook page and post stuff. Yeah. And he's gone. But, I mean, it's still a place where people go. What's the concern about your Facebook page living past you?
I can give you a direct example. We had a family friend just this past year whose son, unfortunately, was killed in an auto accident. Mm-hmm. But he was very connected to all his friends on Facebook. So when it happened, they all started posting a lot of sort of in memorandum stuff on his Facebook page. Mm-hmm. And his mom treasures that stuff and really wants it to stick around. So she wanted access so that she could take control and also, you know, keep, because, you know, people will unfortunately post bad things or spam on those accounts too. But for her, it's sort of a legacy, you know, it's a memorial now. And she obviously doesn't want it cluttered up with that stuff. And I think you can have it go into, like Victor said, into sort of like an archive state. But I think she prefers to have it still open so that his friends, when they do, you know, a birthday comes or some event happens and they get they want to post something, at least for these first few years, she wants that still to be possible.
Okay, so you're not talking about making sure that it goes away when you go away. You're talking about
making
somebody
sure
having control
around
so that something happens, right? So that whatever happens is controlled.
Yeah, and to certain services and certain accounts. Again, it gets back to, like, for me, I probably need to talk to my wife and say, you need to continue, you know, here's the billing at Hover for Maccast.com, and you need to make sure that you keep renewing this, and here's the server, you know, stuff, and here's the Libsyn stuff. I want you to continue to pay these bills and make sure that, you know, these things stay up, even just as an archive. You know, we can, here's how to turn off comments on the posts, but, you know, I would like this to stick around because I think my audience would want it, at least for the first few years.
This is an incredibly fun topic, so let's continue. have you recorded anything?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. That.
Yeah, I see. That's the one I'm thinking about. So we're doing Mission Log, a Roddenberry Star Trek podcast, right? And we get to the one where Tasha Yar dies. Spoiler alert. It happens in the first season. It was 20-something years ago. I know. It's really tragic. And it turns out she's actually recorded. I guess it's because she was security chief or something. She's actually recorded this thing. Right. To say goodbye to everybody just in case something happens. And, you know, we joked about, does that happen? Does she do that every 6 months? Does she do that once a week?
Re-record. Yeah,
do you re-record? Yeah, how do you do that exactly? We can't have this conversation without me thinking of Bill Douthat, Digital Bill, from like a million years ago. And I'm sure as time passes, fewer and fewer people remember who that is. Bill was single. Bill just died. There was no anything. There was no warning. There was no whatever.
Right.
For the very long time, he was still showing up as active on Skype, which obviously he was not. And it was just like, okay, so here's this voice. For a lot of people, it was the very first podcast they heard. And here's this voice that's been there. And suddenly that voice is not there anymore. And nobody gets to say goodbye. And on the one hand, partly because of Mission Log, partly because of Bill, and partly because of the fact that I get emails from people all the time saying, you're the first voice I hear every morning, I've thought, should I record something? But then what are you going to say? You know what I mean? And then, or should you not? Because that's... exactly. Like, what do you do? I mean, it's me, so I'd probably do something goofy and jokey.
Sure.
You know? And then serious at the same time, but I guess, but see, that's the kind of thing I think about. I think it's wonderful that you guys are thinking about your significant others. I'm thinking about everybody else. I don't know why. That's sort of terrible too, isn't it?
No, that's great. I admire that. No, I admire that you're thinking. I mean, maybe you're a better person than I am because I didn't think about, you know, the audience, but there are people out there. I mean, we've built big communities online and these people do care.
Yeah,
they do.
I know. That one's not what the was about. It was the whole just a whole death.
How kind of morbid the topic is. I know it's a more, it does feel like a morbid topic. But.
Either that or I'm dead and that's really awesome. Or I assume now that I'm in a robot body, you know, one of those things. Yeah, it is a morbid topic. It's a, and then the other question, I joked earlier when you said you need to set somebody up to do this, and I said, not it. Who do you task with that? I know who I'm going to ask, and I feel bad because I also know he's going to say yes.
Of course.
that's just a terrible thing to do to somebody, isn't it?
Yeah, but also I think even if you haven't, you know, there's people in your communities that you probably know are going to be the ones, and it's probably the same person that you're going to ask. They're going to be the ones that are going to step up and do it anyway.
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely. Yes.
Yeah.
All right. So.
Is there
they
any,
can't really argue with you, any, Ken, because you're dead.
Is there any other thing that we kind of haven't covered? I really think, you know, the thing that triggered, this story triggered for me was just sort of some empathy with this woman. And it brought this back to my mind, you know, that, hey, this is something every once in a while you probably do want to think about and re-review. I don't think it's anything to dwell on or to do, you know, I don't think you have to set a set schedule for yourself. But, you know, I think it is one of those things that a lot of us probably don't think about because we don't want to, but probably should. So I appreciate you guys taking the time to kind of talk about it and maybe we can get some other people to, you know, sort of think. Because it's getting more and more complicated, and there's more and more of this stuff around there. You're going to auto pay on bills. You know, when you start getting into it, one thing leads to another, and you start to realize, and hopefully it doesn't become too overwhelming, which is another reason why I think it's good to maybe take in little bits at a time, right? Start with one little thing. You know, it's sort of like the same way I started with passwords and 1Password and stuff like that, or you start with any other bit of technology. You start with one little thing. And then you sort of build and by the time, you know, you're done, you've got a really firm understanding or you've really kind of put something together that's comprehensive. So anything else to add to this or should we move on to talking about death, but in a very, very different way? Death of technology at Apple or death of services at Apple, which may or may not be a good thing. And I'm talking about iAd because it sounds like we're ready to move on. So Apple's getting rid of iAd apparently, which to me wasn't really surprising news. And it's not clear if they're getting rid of it or if they're revamping it, but they're definitely stopping. They announced this week that they're going to be getting rid of the iAd sales staff. They're moving to some sort of automated system that they're building out. They're no longer taking new developers into the iAd program. If somebody's already a developer in the program, they get to stay in, I think, until June 30th.
June 30th.
Yeah, when they're sort of shuttering the system. And then also, I think this is related to iAd. Apple announced that the ad-supported radio station part of Apple Music, other than Beats 1, is moving over to only being offered in the paid Apple Music subscriber side, which has no ads. So, you know, they're not going to have to do ads for sort of the Pandora-style radio service part of Apple Music. So did this surprise any of you or do you think I think it's a good move for Apple because I don't think the program really was ever that successful and it just seemed like another one of these things that they were doing because they wanted to take control but it was slowly becoming not the thing that they originally tried to sell us.
Somewhere the John Gruber equivalent on the Google side is writing a claim chowder post right now about all the people who said Apple is coming, Google's in trouble, now they're in the business, you know.
the ad business, you mean?
Yeah, remember when it first was announced, everybody was like, oh boy, now Apple's in the game.
Well, they said that about search too, right?
Yeah.
And that's never sort of happened.
Well, except Apple actually got into the mobile advertising game. The search thing has just sort of been rumored and speculated repeatedly.
Right.
Do you suppose, why didn't iAd work? Is it because they exerted too much control or because they wanted too much money or all the above?
I believe it's because of exactly what Apple said when this announcement came up. It's just like, we were never really that good at it. It just wasn't, I don't think it was in there. They said that, right? I mean, that was kind of the quote.
Well, I mean, that is what one person inside said, but I mean, I think the people still might have been interested if they hadn't made it so damn difficult to get involved with, right? You can't make your own iAds. Initially, you couldn't make your own iAds. Initially, you had to go to Apple and get them to make your iAd for you. But the minimum buy-in was $1 million.
Right.
So you weren't going to get anybody who wanted to test the waters. You were going to get things like The Leaf, which I think was one of the first people. You're going to get things like McDonald's, which I believe was one of the first people as well.
Right. I understood that, though. I kind of thought that was smart in a way because, again, the original way it was sold was mobile ads suck, and they do. They are terrible.
Yes.
Nobody likes them. Nobody looks at them. And so Apple wanted to do the Apple thing, which is say, we want to make it better, and the way we know to make things better is to have end-to-end control. And right. We're going to start with the really high-end guys because they're going to be able to pay what we think it's going to cost to get this up and running. And I think the side benefit for Apple was it was a slow way to move into the business with very little risk because you're going to a big client who has deep pockets and you can work with them directly and you're taking on, you know, it slowly and building a program. What was weird to me is that when it started to sort of not work, they almost immediately flipped it back to building this automated system and they started taking little ads. It was like they went to the complete other end of the spectrum, it seemed like.
Well, how do you get good at something, though? I mean, you're coming into it brand new and now 5 years later, they're saying, we're just not good at this. Well, right. I mean, they didn't really give themselves much of a chance to get good at it, right? Because I would assume that the way you're going to get good at it, what did I read the other day? Well, there are a couple of things. Somebody told me the other day that Freddie Mercury used to write like 2 or 3 songs a week or maybe even 2 or 3 songs a day.
Sure.
He would just crank out songs. And of course, we've never heard most of them. And I would assume that most of them were actually crap. But the thing is, he wrote so many that when you're writing 1,000 songs, you know, picking out 10 good ones is not nearly as difficult as it might be. To go the other way, Apple is doing this thing where they're going to take $1 million and they're going to control everything and they're only going to have the biggest clients and then they're only going to get 5. So what chance do they have to get good at it? I mean, flipping it the other way might have been a good idea. Maybe going in with a lower cost of entry earlier, maybe being more collaborative from the beginning, because all the stories that we hear is that it was exceedingly slow and that they didn't like creative input from the people who were giving them $1 million.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, so what chance did they have to do it? Now, the other thing is, as you say, people don't pay attention to ads or they don't like, you know, really like get into them and play with them. The way Apple seemed to, you know, have wanted them to do.
Sure. I mean, they thought they were going to sort of make them content and interactive. And I remember the Leaf ad, and that's probably the only iAd I even remember ever interacting. And I only did it as a, like, I have to do this. It's my job. So I got to check this out.
I actually had the iAd gallery because I'm fascinated by advertising. I like good advertising when it's actually good. The iAd Gallery app was kind of fun, but they killed that over a year ago now, I think.
Yeah. I don't know. It's just one of these things that I think, and I'm going to throw this out to you guys because it's been something I've been thinking about, but I haven't formulated it, and I've been thinking about doing almost a whole episode devoted to this. And it seems to me that iAd falls in this category of what I'm calling Apple's, like, spokes, and they have what I consider hub products, which are going to be things like the Mac and the iPad and the iPhone and the iPod, the Apple TV, you know, Apple Watch, these sorts of devices, right? They're hardware, they're core products and things like that. And then you have products and services that sort of circle around that. And some of them make sense, you know, and this is sort of what I'm calling the spokes, but a lot of the spokes just seem to be baffling to me. Like, why are you even bothering getting into this? And with iAd, it was clear we want to change the advertising, you know, we want to change this stuff. But when they then turn around, and I see this with a lot of their services, and fall back on, oh well, we're just going to now do what everybody else is doing because this isn't working out. And it's not clear if that's what they're doing with iAd, but there seems to be some indication that they might move to more of the sort of Google model where I'm an ad producer. I just produce my ad in, you know, the standard format that's going to fit the mobile platforms and throw it out into a marketplace. And then developers can pick it up and, you know, I decide what I'm going to charge for it. You know, here's the rate that you're going to get paid if you want to carry my ads. And, you put your ads in my app, and then, you know, you get paid, and I get ad views. And Apple's going to no longer take the 30% cut. There's some sort of automated system, and I think they already have the system in place for, like, the news app. But it's sort of like if you're not going to do the Apple thing, which is change the world and make it better, why not just dump it? Just, you know, why you don't need that thing that's not feeding into your hub. It's not benefiting your customers or your core products.
It's still benefiting developers though, right? I mean, if you're
there's
Hyundai.
A million other third party ad services that are doing mobile ads that do it, you know, do this kind of advertising better than Apple probably. I shouldn't say better. Apple probably can do a very good job building that system. They have the engineering talent, they have the people. But if they're just going to be another Me Too system, why spend the time and effort? Why use those engineers and those people when they could be working on some other product that's probably better for benefiting Apple and Apple's customers? Am I crazy in this? And it seems like a lot of times where the spoke products go wrong for Apple is when other people are involved. So Apple's classically been, we're going to do the whole thing beginning to end. And when they do that, they make amazing things and they do amazing things. When they start getting mired in technologies and services and things that require and demand that other people are involved, it never seems to go well. And I'm thinking about things like the rumored TV service, right? Mess. Apple struggles with even Apple Music and iTunes again, but it's mostly the outside forces. And when they're able to start closing things up, say a la Beats One, right? Beats One, I think, is great. Now, the question is, do people still want or listen to that kind of radio style content? And I'm not sure I'm convinced on that, but the product that Apple's producing and putting out there, I think, is a very high quality product, but they're controlling everything. They're controlling the delivery, and, you know, they still have to kind of deal with the licensing on the label side. That's never going to go away, but they've essentially cut out. I mean, they're running the radio station. They didn't try to go to some other radio station and say, we want to carry your content.
Well, they went to Zane Lowe, though, who almost immediately said, I don't even know why they're doing this.
Which is kind of hysterical. But I mean, again, but I think, you know, their vision is we want to make radio something more compelling and better, and we want to do a better job of it, and they're controlling it as much as possible end to end. But when they start doing these other things, you know, it seems like they start out with a big vision, but because of outside forces, they're unable to do it. And Apple TV was another example of this in my mind. So I'm sorry, I'm probably dominating this conversation, but I wanted to throw that out there, and I'm curious to hear.
I think kind of related is the whole thing with HomeKit. They announced HomeKit a year and a half ago.
That's another great example.
So they were working on it. If they announced it a year and a half ago, you know, they've been working on it at least 2.5 years. And the it seems to me like it's been a fizzle. I mean, when it first came out, I was very excited. I said, great, I'm going to get all this HomeKit stuff. And as I see it from the outside, it looks to me like the delay has been getting the third-party vendors and hardware people in. I mean, like, I know one of the things Apple did is they insist that there's encryption on the network for the HomeKit stuff. So people, you know, down the street can't turn your lights on and unlock your doors, which is probably a good idea. But it does seem like it's been delayed. And it got me wondering, which is kind of on the same theme of Adam, is how come Apple never did their own hardware for HomeKit?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And
why aren't they doing hubs? Why aren't they doing the app? Because it has to be open. This is the thing, is they're letting it be open. And it seems to me, this could be another way to present this, is anytime Apple does anything that's open, it just doesn't seem to go well for them.
Yeah, well, on HomeKit, I agree, they need an app and they need their own hardware, and then probably stuff would just work. And but I don't know if they even have that on their roadmap at this point, because it seems like they've put their hat in entirely with third-party vendors.
So, go ahead. Sorry.
I don't know if you guys used any HomeKit stuff, but like my Hue lights, figuring out how to get HomeKit to work with my Hue lights was a lot harder than I think it should have been. And it's because there's no app. You know, you got to go into settings and, you know, all these weird places that it just doesn't seem natural. And I'm a nerd and write about this stuff, so I figured it out. But I'm sure there's a lot of people out there that have HomeKit devices in their house that they're just baffled as to whether or not they could ever make them work.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I think part of the problem with the HomeKit stuff is that you've got companies that are creating devices that are proprietary to their own systems, or they're making money in the back end of a lot of the alarm type services. You know, they don't want to open source and be a part of that whole thing and have people just be able to go and buy a unit, a camera that interfaces with, you know, AT&T's alarm system that's not theirs. So they've closed off that gate, you know, companies like that. And so therefore, you know, it doesn't get traction, and manufacturers aren't going to be out there making this stuff because they run into the lowest common denominator, which is, you know, that you don't have an ecosystem that truly supports this stuff in an open source way in the traditional sense, because everybody's greedy and wants to make money in their own little proprietary fence.
And I wouldn't even call it greed. I mean, that's just business. And you don't want to be marginalized and turned into the dumb supplier. I mean, that's what Microsoft did to PC manufacturers, is they turned it into commodities, and nobody wants to commoditize their product. But it seems to me one of the natural responses for Apple would have been, okay, we've got this really awesome app. We've got this thing called HomeKit, and we've got these light bulbs and whatever. I mean, Apple's made crazier things in the past. And, you know, and they could probably charge more for them because that's what Apple does and they get it. So I don't know. It just feels to me like it's been kind of a fizzle.
Yeah. Again, I think you're right. And, you know, I think Apple looked at the ecosystem and the vision for HomeKit was awesome. And a lot of people were really, really excited about it. But because they have to rely, you know, the endpoints are third party companies adopting Apple's philosophy and building it in, it never really worked. Again, it's another one of these situations where I think you can look at any time Apple's technology can't be end-to-end closed, they can't seem to achieve the goals that they want to achieve. And so my question as of late is it even worth Apple pursuing those kinds of things anymore? Or should have they from the very beginning just went, you know what, we're gonna make light bulbs and smoke detectors and alarm systems, and we're gonna make a hub, and we're gonna write the software, and we're going to slap a Apple logo on all of it, and you're just going to buy it from us. And, you know, all of the analysts and the tech people are going to cry out in pain. Oh, my God, Apple's, you know, selling the razors and the razor blades again, and it's a closed system, you know, iPod. And
I'd be one of those. This is the reason I never wanted to see an Apple television.
Right.
I never wanted to see a full-on Apple television for exactly this reason. What I want is to buy a television and have it work with whatever I have. And car manufacturers are getting this right now with their in-dash entertainment systems. They're not, or infotainment systems. They're not putting in Android Auto. They're not putting in Lynx. They're not putting in CarPlay. Right. They're putting in this blank slate, and you plug in whatever you want there and go. And ideally, we talked about this, Kelly, years ago on macOS Ken Live. What I want is to buy a fridge that's smart enough to talk to whatever I have. And if Apple said, no, buy the Apple refrigerator, no. I mean, I don't know if that ends up pushing me out to the Android ecosystem, or if I just have a dumb refrigerator, or if I have a smart refrigerator that can't talk to my smartphone. But I don't want everything to have an Apple logo on it, because I don't want to have to spend $100 extra on that box of light bulbs.
But isn't the problem...
go ahead.
Isn't the problem then your experience becomes marginalized and homogenized?
Well, let me back up a bit. I mean, it has been stated more than once on this conversation that we're nerds. I mean, you guys are saying it feels like HomeKit has fizzled. It feels to me like we're in the top of the first. And it's at least a 9-inning game, and it might even be a 7-game series. I mean, we're at the very start of this whole thing right now. And I'm just like you guys. I mean, the second I heard that Apple was getting into wearables, I wanted it the next day. You know, there's all this talk about Apple possibly getting into virtual reality or augmented reality. And we've had goofy augmented reality things for the past several years. I remember a couple of years ago, the Starbucks app, you could point your camera at the cup, and then augmented reality, you would have this little guy sledding across your table or whatever your camera was pointed at the time, right? Apple's not going to make it like a simple little donkey bird trick when they get into augmented reality. But that also means it's going to be longer before they get into it than anybody else. Oculus Rift is coming out in 2 months. Apple will probably someday do something in virtual reality. They're not going to be following Oculus Rift immediately. And I mean, you're talking about the confusion with the stuff that you've got right now. I mean, this has only just begun, right? Yeah. So it's not there right now, no question. But I mean, we're not there either.
But what I would say to that, though, is that, you know, Apple classically, they come into a problem and bring their knowledge of software to largely resolve it, to find the solution that works.
Right.
And here we are in HomeKit, and it's been two releases of iOS, and the direction that we're seeing, at least on the outside world, is that they're not trying to solve the problem the way they classically do with a great app and software. I don't know what they're doing, but it just seems to me like they're not driving this boat in the right direction. So maybe you're right. Maybe in a couple of years they'll fix it, but it just seems to me like it's a lost opportunity. Right now it is the Wild West of home automation, and a company that could come in and say, okay, we have a solution that works and that normal people can use, would be very advantageous to them. And also think it would help them sell more iPhones and iPads and all the other stuff too.
So would it surprise you if I told you I now have my Nest on HomeKit?
I haven't kept up. I don't think that would make sense, though. It's owned by Google, right?
It is, yeah.
Yeah.
So the frustrating part of this, and my audience knows this because I covered it in my last show, but I'll just throw out there real quickly for you, is doing a hub and doing this stuff is relatively easy because somebody's already done it. There's a project called Homebridge that is, and this gets technical geeky, so you'd have to set this up. But see, Apple would have the engineers and talent to make a hardware product that could take this and, you know, build it for everyone where it's a plug-and-play solution. But right now, there's Homebridge is just a Node.js server, basically a little web server that you can download off of GitHub and you can install on your Mac, a PC. I have it actually running on a Raspberry Pi. And then there's plugins that anybody can write to get devices talking to the Homebridge hub. And I have it now linked to my Sonos and my Nest. And if you have Hue bulbs and you don't want to buy Hue's bridge, you can build your own now. And you can plug in all kinds of stuff and get them talking to each other. And then, as you said, David, the missing piece is, and it's not even so much missing because there's a third-party app for it, but really the missing piece is the software. And what's interesting about when I ran Homebridge is there's an app for iOS called Home. Do you use Home? That kind of brings everything together. I think it's $15. But what's interesting is you can use almost any HomeKit app, and it will see, once you've started adding devices to the bridge, it will see all of them. So if I open up my Insteon app or the Eve app from Elgato, and I don't have any Eve products at all, or I open up the Home app, I see all of my scenes and my rooms and my devices and things in any one of those apps, and I can control them from any one of those apps. So if Apple would write a really cool app and they would build a simple little hub, it can be done. I've seen the technology through Homebridge, and why they don't do it is continuing to be baffling. So there you go. You can solve the solution yourself if you're really nerdy, but I fully agree with you. Apple needs to jump in at a higher level. But I also come back to, Apple always took a lot of flack for, you know, not being open, for being closed with their technology. But it just seems to me that every time they try to go open, there's, you know, it doesn't end up being the vision that I think that they want or they present. And I'm starting to feel like they shouldn't do it anymore. They should just accept the critics and go, look, we built the system. It's awesome if you buy it. If you don't, hey, there's a number of other things that you can buy. And, you know, you brought up CarPlay, Ken. I think that's another example. They're having to deal with the auto manufacturers, and it's like Toyota said, oh, we're in, and now they're, nope, we're out. We're not doing it at all. And if it's not ubiquitous, it's not really, you know, for Apple customers, then, you know, I suddenly have to not buy a Toyota because they're not going to play with Apple. I don't know. Well, maybe it's better that I just buy an Apple car and I know my Apple car is going to work with my Apple Watch and my iPhone and my Mac and my HomeKit and everything.
There's no shortage of aftermarket solutions at this point now, though, and some of them are actually coming in fairly reasonably. Like I spent, well, I don't have CarPlay, but I think I spent $100 on my last car stereo, and there's one coming out. There's a CarPlay unit coming out now that's, I want to say, either $300 or $400. When they were $700 or $800, there's no way I'm thinking about it. But, you know, $400, you know, if it does all the CarPlay stuff, that's kind of cool. This may be weird, and I know we're going in a completely different direction, though, but yes, Apple has always done the closed system because Apple wants the system to be as good as the system can possibly be. But Steve Jobs didn't want apps on the iPhone. He wanted web apps. He thought that web apps were going to be a cool thing. That implies a sort of a more open, more plug-and-play philosophy at a higher level, and the kind of thing that Apple doesn't normally do.
Right.
Is it possible that on some level, Apple actually does want to be able to be plug-and-play because they think they need to sort of get rid of that idea of the closed system? And I'm not saying they need it for the sake of money because they've got all the money. But I'm wondering if what they really want is you walk into Home Depot or you walk into Sears, you walk into wherever you're going to go and the pain of having to choose something, and pain is a weird term when you're talking about spending hundreds of dollars on an appliance, but the pain of having to choose something, they're not part of that. When you get that thing home, of course it's going to talk to your phone, and it doesn't matter what your phone is. I mean, are they looking at sort of a wholly inclusive technological world as opposed to let's do this and let's hook this up and let's do that kind of thing?
I mean, I get what you're saying. I just kind of feel...
I'm not saying it. I'm asking. I'm asking if that's a possibility.
I have a feeling that, you know, they're tech nerds. They're geeks. I think there's a desire probably internally for Apple for that to happen. And I think that's why we see them do things like HomeKit that are open and try these things.
Mm-hmm. Don't we just have to give it time?
Maybe.
I'm sorry.
Maybe, but I think maybe also that I'm starting to feel like I don't know that it can match. I don't think they can achieve what they want to achieve going that route, I guess is what I'm trying to say. Mm. But that's just me personally. I just think I've seen too many examples where it just has not worked out. That's all.
Sorry.
Well, I guess time will tell.
I'm always, again, not to keep bringing up Mission Log, but we always joke about how great it is that in the 24th century, nobody worries about operating systems.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Hopefully it doesn't take 300 years, you know, to get there, or 200 years to get there.
I agree. You also don't really know. But it, in that utopian future...
Mm-hmm.
You don't even know who builds that stuff, right? Like brands aren't even a thing.
Right. It just is.
It just exists, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't think there's a logo on any device.
Well, right? Unless you count Starfleet's logo, but yeah, no, there's not.
That's interesting. I never really thought about that before, but I guess in the Roddenberry vision of the future, companies don't exist. Like,
well, that gets weird, but that's probably for a different show for a different time.
Sure. We had to come back to that, circle back to that one.
There's an occasional capitalist in there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you want to move on to something really sort of capitalistic and product driven?
Sure.
Sure.
Did you guys get any cool stuff recently over the holidays? Stuff you're enjoying? We'll move on to a little more fun topic.
Technology stuff or just cool stuff?
Technology stuff, cool stuff, stuff you're excited about. I didn't get too much tech this holiday season, to be honest.
No, me neither. I got my wife an Apple Watch.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Something she wanted, or?
It was something that she was interested in. It was one of those things where, knowing her, I was like, yeah. Her obsession with technology. Ask me which one of us has a harder time pulling away from the iPhone. Go ahead. knowing her obsession with technology and knowing her obsession with being constantly informed, But then also knowing her habit for falling down the rabbit hole. Like, you know, you go to check one thing on your phone and 10 minutes later you look up and you realize, you know, your coffee got cold because you didn't drink your coffee because you were too busy, you know, checking this and checking this and checking this. She's now getting messages and pings and things like that on her wrist, and she's able to see them and respond to them, you know, quickly, or see them and decide whether it's something that has to be responded to. That within the first few days, she was telling me that, you know, she really appreciates the fact that she is not as glued to her phone as she always was. So was it something she wanted? It was something that she was actively interested in. I don't think she knew yet whether she wanted it, but having hung out with her. And that was the other thing. The second she opened it, I was like, listen, we have X amount of time. Put it through its paces. If it is something that feels extravagant, if it's something you feel like you're not going to use, we can return it. And yeah, that's just never going to happen. So,
yeah, so as that was going to be a follow-up question. How does she feel about it?
Oh, she loves it.
Cool.
She absolutely loves it. You have one too, right?
Yeah, I do.
Now, do you send her like heartbeats and little drawings and things like that?
Wow. I guess I
know
the answer should be yes. The answer should be yes. I think I have a couple of times. She's, you know, I work from home, so that's easy for me to do. She works from work, so it's not quite as easy for her to do. So I think I've done that and have not gotten responses. Yeah. So yeah, then I kind of stopped.
Well, you know, my wife and I still do that. I mean, and we've had the watches since it launched, and I don't know anybody that really does it. I think that feature is kind of is something that didn't really take off.
Well, I mean, it got people interested.
Yeah.
It's a novel, idea. Before, right? But yeah, you know, it's like photo booth, or there's always that one feature that is compelling. You know, I call it the gives good demo feature.
Yeah.
Right.
If it gets you to put it on and try it out, and then you discover five other things about it that you like, then it did its job. You know, yeah. I gotta tell you the really cool thing that I got though. That's not tech at all. I get a full on Boba Fett bathrobe.
Ooh,
like
nice.
It looks like you put it on, it looks like Boba Fett. You know, just up out of the shower. I don't know what that actually looks like, but it's like the Boba Fett outfit, but in bathrobe form. So yeah,
you gotta appreciate a good Boba Fett bathrobe.
Absolutely. It's a good Boba Fett bathrobe too. It's fluffy and absorbent and the whole thing. It's fantastic.
I got my technology gift was Star Wars related too. I don't even think it's technology either. I don't know if you've seen at like the Target and the various stores selling the plethora of Star Wars related merchandise that has come out.
Yeah.
We haven't seen that.
There's a stormtrooper.
There's a Star Wars movie?
Who's about 4 feet tall. It's like huge. It's bigger than some kids. And I told my wife, I said, you know, that would be really cool for the garden, like as a scarecrow, you know? So my wife, being the wonderful person she is, started looking for sales. And sure enough, the 47-year-old man got a 4-foot stormtrooper for the holidays this year.
So is it just like awesome. A giant action figure?
You'll have to go to my house and see.
Does it have like electronics and things?
No, well, he's got a little speaker. If you push a button, he'll tell you things. But generally, it's a mannequin. It's a stormtrooper mannequin that's 4 feet tall. And now he is installed right over my vegetable garden, staked into the ground, and he looks awesome.
That's so cool. I have a friend who accidentally ended up with two of those, but not the 4 foot. I guess like 2.5 foot, maybe. Yeah. They're actually. I mean, for an idiot thing that you have no use for, which is why I don't have one, because that's what I tell myself every time I'm at Target and see it. I'm like, no, you don't need that. It's silly because, man, I want it. It's like a 2.5 foot tall stormtrooper, I think. It's like $20 maybe. And so he bought one for himself, and then he bought one for somebody else. And then I guess he bought one for maybe his nephew. And his nephew's parents were like, no. And so, oh, darn, now he has two stormtroopers that stand on either side of his man cave. Yeah.
Excuse me. Poor guy.
Bummer for him. Yeah, I know.
Yeah. Well, the thing that came into my household, and it was actually before Christmas, and I think I've mentioned it on the show, but I'll let you guys know that I was excited about, wasn't technology for me. It was actually technology for my daughter. She got this thing called a Kano, which I was excited about because, you know, being a child of the 80s and when computers were, you know, the thing that some people went to a club and built their own sort of thing, it kind of brings that into the modern age. So it's a little computer kit, and it's based on Raspberry Pi, and it's all snapped together, really kind of easy stuff. But it's basically a computer that you build yourself, and they added this year a screen kit, so you can also get a little LCD screen that comes with it. I forget the size on it. But she kind of got the whole thing, and it was, like, really neat. So you actually build the computer, you know, plug it in, and then it guides you through. The operating system is great, and it's actually open source. So if you just have a Raspberry Pi, you could just actually download the operating system that they built. It's, you know, it's a version of Linux, but then on top of it, they put all kinds of games and things that walk kids through learning programming and code and stuff like that. And she's loving it. And I think the computer itself is like $99, and you get, you know, the Wi-Fi dongle and a speaker and all the cables, and, you know, it's like out of the box, put it together, and you basically build and program your own computer.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I kept it pretty geeky too, but simple. A couple of things that I got. One of them was this really powerful Anker Power. It's called the Power 20100. It's 20,000 milliamps. So,
is it a battery?
It's a battery, $40 battery. Doesn't weigh a whole lot. It's a little big, but it will, like, I don't know, charge an iPad Pro and an iPhone 6S Plus like twice over, you know. And so it's really great for travel. And at that price, you just can't beat it. I got it even cheaper than that. It was on one of the Christmas specials on Amazon. So I picked that up. The other thing I picked up, which sounds silly, but it's been really useful, is this Energizer 4-LED headlight that you, like, strap onto your hat or your head if you're going, like, for me, when I go take pictures at night and I need to see my camera, just flip on this little LED on your head, and it's just really easy to be able to take outside and wear it on your head and see, you know, in the middle of the night.
You know, so, get one of those and put it in your trunk, too. It's, like, it's really useful if you ever get stuck.
Oh, I'm going to get another one now. That's a great idea. And then the big item I got is, because I'm in the middle of recording an album, a CD this year, I wanted to get a really good audio interface. And if anybody has more money than sense, a company called Universal Audio makes a whole line of interfaces called Apollo. And the one that I got was the Apollo 8. But they make a twin, literally the best audio analog to digital converters I've ever heard. Really, really high quality stuff. These guys have been in the recording industry for a very long time, and I'm just in love. It's everything I could want and more to get this project done. So it's awesome.
Cool. What about for this year? Are you guys excited about anything we're hearing Apple related at all, or not? You know, it's feeling like more of the same.
I don't know, it seems like this will be a talk year. I mean, last year they introduced the Watch and the iPad Pro. They brought some new big products out.
Yeah.
And I think this year there'll be a lot of refinement to those, and that'll be fun to see. And
yeah, I'm due for a new notebook at some point. Whether it'll be this year or next year, I don't really know. But we haven't heard much on the Mac front. And I know a lot of my audience has commented on this. Like, what's happening? Are we going to get some new Mac Pros, or I don't know what, if you guys have a take on that. My theory is that I think Apple's gonna wither the Air line and simply go with Retina MacBook Pros and Retina MacBooks, kind of get back to that, hey, we have a consumer notebook and we have a pro notebook sort of philosophy.
Yeah, but I don't think that's gonna happen this year.
You don't think that'll happen this year?
I feel like there's still enough. The MacBook Air still brings something to the table that a lot of people want. And, there's a lot of people who want the extra ports and all that. So, I don't know.
You don't think the ports are going away, too? I think we're going to end up with just, and I don't mean going to, like, on the MacBook with just one port. I'm thinking that MacBook Pros, though, are just going to have
USB 3.
Yeah, and I don't even know. I think Thunderbolt will stick around for another year.
Yeah. It's interesting. When the first MacBook came out, when the first MacBook Air came out, it was the same thing. You had the laptop line, the desktop line, then you had the ultralight line, which was the Air.
Right.
And eventually the Air supplanted the MacBook. And remember the old black and the white MacBooks?
Yeah.
Way.
A lot of people love those.
And now it seems like, I think we're going just the same thing happening in reverse. Now the MacBook is ultimately going to replace the MacBook Air. But just to me, but I mean, I don't know anything, but it seems to me that we've probably got another year or two of the MacBook Air. I mean, have they got the price down far enough? Are they going to get it down to $1,000 for the general MacBook with the Retina screen? I don't know if that's going to happen this year.
Oh, yeah, I think it'll happen.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Why not? I really do. You know, and the more interesting thing, too, is what are they going to do on the desktop side? You know?
You mean whether the Mac Pro is going away?
Well, you have two ends, right? You have two ends of that spectrum. You have the Mac Pro, mm-hmm. and you have also, you know, what's the future of the Mac Mini? I think really this is a year where Apple might do something, you know, on that side of things. And I don't know if it's, hey, we just have a consumer iMac and we have a Pro iMac and the other two things go away. Or, you know, there's a certain number of pros, though, that really rely on that Mac Pro. And there's a certain segment of the market that also really loves and relies on the Mini. But I question, you know, do they have a space in really Apple's sort of current lineup? I mean, are there enough customers on those two ends for them to continue to justify those products? And I don't know.
I don't think so.
Go ahead, Victor, and then Ken.
No, I hope so. I really, for my brethren out there that have the Mac Pros and haven't had an update since 2013, I hope this is the year that they get them. And you're right, Adam. It's a whole community of people that really rely on these machines for extremely high-end things. But the ones that need them really need them. So I hope that they do get a refresh on both ends of that spectrum. The other big hope that I have is that we see some iPad Pro level apps coming from Apple, you know, Logic, for example, mm-hmm. ported to iPad Pro, Final Cut Studio version ported to iPad Pro. So I hope Apple itself does some work and along with other companies and brings some very centric applications that take advantage of what the iPad Pro can do.
What were you saying, Ken?
Well, actually, no, there are a couple of things I wanted to say. I don't think Apple is obviously not as obsessed with only having five things,
right?
At this point, I mean the way they used to be, right? I mean, witness the crazy number of configurations you can buy the Apple Watch in, and that's even before you start adding different bands and things like that. We have the iPhone 6, we have the iPhone 6S, we have the iPhone 5S, I guess. And then there's the possibility, I don't know if we're going to talk about it today or not, but there's the possibility of the new 4-inch iPhone that everybody's talking about. Yep. We're not sort of in that Steve Jobs era of, you know, we have two computers, like it or lump it. It seems to me that there's room for the iPad Pro and the Mac Mini. I mean, they know how many people are buying them, so they know how many they would need to, you know, keep producing. I don't think they're sitting on a warehouse full of Mac Minis that they thought were sure going to move and suddenly haven't. The other thing, when Victor says that he wants to see some iPad Pro level apps coming from Apple, that has been the one thing that has stymied me. And, you know, I'm a podcaster. I think a couple of you guys might be podcasters as well.
Yeah.
The fact that Apple TV came out without podcast support still stymies me, and it actually kind of angers me. Now, I know it's supposed to be in tvOS, whatever the next one is coming out.
9.2, I think.
9.2 or 9.3? I thought we were on 9.2. Whatever. The next one it's supposed to be in. And I hope it actually is, because that would be fantastic news. I don't understand how we have podcast apps for the Mac, for the iPad, and the iPhone from Apple, and then they release this new thing, and no, we don't have that for you. Because what is available in the App Store in the TV App Store is really subpar. And I know a lot of people think that Apple's podcast app is subpar, but you haven't seen anything until you've seen the crappy things that are available for Apple TV currently.
Yeah. On the OS front, just to clarify things, so it's a little bit confusing. TV OS is at 9.1 currently, and 9.2 is in beta. We just got 9.2 for iOS this week, and 9.3 for iOS is in beta. So
yeah,
they're off by 1 point release, I guess, from each other for whatever reason, just to confuse us.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, cool. If you guys want to talk, do we want to talk briefly about the iPhone? I know I had it on there, but then, you know, time-wise, I just figured it's kind of been done. I mean, you brought it up, Ken, the 4-inch iPhone. I think, you know, it makes sense for Apple to update that. I guess the only debate or question that I have is, you know, what are they going to call it? Because it's been thrown out, you know, 5E, 6C, 7C, and then what are the specs going to be? And my personal theory is that they're going to go with something where they're going to go with a 6C, and they're going to have it be right in line hardware-wise with the current generation of the 6S and the 6S Plus, meaning A9 processor, 2 gigs of RAM. And the only thing sort of missing from it, the main thing missing from the 6C would obviously be I think is going to be the 3D touch. I don't think it'll have 3D touch, but I think they'll bring in the NFC support for Apple Pay and, you know, so basically a 4-inch version of the iPhone 6S. But that's just my theory.
I'm not sure. Well, I mean, if it's only to keep costs down, I don't know why they wouldn't have 3D touch on it. I mean, if it's meant to be a worldwide phone, if it's just an emerging markets phone, then yeah, you don't want to do that because you want to probably save on components. But
yeah, I think it's a cost. It's a cost thing, and also just a feature differentiation thing. So it's like, hey, if you want that whiz bang new thing, you got to step up and buy the more expensive thing.
The iPhone flower power. That's my prediction.
Well, it is supposed to come in supposedly a limited array of colors. What those are, I guess we could talk about. Flower power would be nice. I wouldn't mind them bringing that back. Dalmatian dots.
There you go.
But it goes in line with that. I mean, it just seems to make sense that there are these people that really want a 4-inch phone. I guess it kind of goes along with the you know, people who want a mini and a Mac Pro. There's a certain segment of the market that just says, okay, that next size is too large, and you know, but they still want something that has the latest and greatest technology. And so I think, especially with the timing of the release, you know, supposedly Apple's going to announce something, according to the rumors, in like March. So be coming out March, April, May timeframe. I think it'll help sort of juice iPhone sales too, through the kind of slow period as they build into the fall release of the next iPhone. So, just my theory. All right, we got anything else we want to talk about, or should we wrap it up?
I got nothing.
Got nothing?
All right. I got to go write my will.
Yeah, we got a task for everybody to do. Well, cool. I, as always, I really appreciate you guys coming out, and especially this time around, because you're really helping me out with, you know, the schedule here. So thank you all. Let's just go back around in reverse order, and you guys can tell people where they can find you and what you're up to and all that stuff. So, Victor?
Great. Yeah, good to be here. And you can find me on Twitter at VICTORCAJIAO. And my podcast, it's called TerraTech. Found at terratech.tech, and go subscribe. I've got some pretty neat interviews with some real different people in the technology world. I kind of blend in lifestyle and technology and how people use technology to do what they do. This next February 1st, I'm going to be interviewing a guy who designs and manufactures watches, mechanical watches. So I'm really interested in finding out how he uses technology to do that.
Very cool. Yeah, definitely people should check that out. And Ken, what are you doing, up to? Where can people find you?
Oh, macOS Ken tends to be where I am just about everywhere. So Instagram, Twitter, it's macOS Ken, both of those places. I would love for people to check out iChart Radio. So I had this magazine thing on iOS Newsstand called iChart, and that's gone away, as has iOS Newsstand. But I'm still getting together with Michael LaPlante every week to talk over some of the biggest stories, or the most interesting stories to us anyway, of the week. So it's usually between 45 minutes and an hour. It's four segments, I think. Three or four segments, I can't remember. And yeah, EYE iChart Radio. It's available on iTunes. And then, of course, there's Mission Log and there's macOS Ken. So really, I'll just talk to you as long as you'll listen.
Cool. People should check that out. And Dave, when you're not in the garden, what are you up
to? Yeah, I'm like everyone else on this panel. I don't have a single unpublished thought. And you can find most of the stuff I do over at MacSparky.com. And I also am on a little podcast called Mac Power Users with Katie Floyd. And you can find that at MacPowerUsers.com.
Very cool. All right. Well, guys, thanks again for hanging out. And for the rest of you, thanks for hanging out with us. And hope you enjoyed this Amigos show. And we'll talk to you soon. So there you go, the Amigos. And for sure, if you are not subscribed to David, Ken's or Victor's podcast, you certainly should check them out. I encourage you to do that. Check them out on iTunes or go to their websites, their URLs, see what they're up to. Really great guys, and they do really great shows. Well worth a listen. But with that, that is going to do it for this week. One thing I want to let you know about that's happening this year is I am going to be attending the MacStock conference. And MacStock's a new conference that just started up last year. A bunch of folks I know went there. It is a Mac Apple community conference. I heard a lot of great things about it from a number of people. So I'm looking forward to attending, and I'm also presenting this year. The event is happening July 16th and 17th. It's in Woodstock, Illinois, here in the States. And there is a great lineup of speakers forming from folks throughout the Apple community. Victor Cahiao, who you heard on this podcast from TerraTech, is going to be there. Melissa Davis, the Mac Mommy. Chuck Joyner, who does the awesome Mac Voices podcast. Don McAllister, one of the original podcasters, along with me, one of the first guys I met in podcasting face-to-face. Screencasts Online, of course, is his show. And Allison Sheridan from the NoSillaCast podcast, and just a whole host of other people. I keep hearing more people signing on. So the event is also coinciding with the second annual Midwest Mac Barbecue, hosted by Barry Falk, who another great member of the Apple Mac community. And it's just going to be a ton of fun. Actually, the Midwest Mac Barbecue is being rolled into and part of the conference this year. So it's included with the price of admission. And I think it's going to be great. I'm looking forward to it this summer. If you're looking for something to do, you want to hang out with a bunch of Mac geeks in the Mac community and just have a general good time, plus learn some great stuff, go to the website, MacStock2016.com. You can look over the speaker list, see the schedule and the conference and stuff like that, get all the information. And if you decide you want to go, and I would love to see you there, you can use this URL to get $50 off your ticket. So it's a great bargain as well. MacStock2016.com/MacStock50 off. So MacStock2016.com/MacStock50 off. Go to that URL and you'll get $50 off your MacStock tickets. And I look forward to seeing you there. And if you don't remember that URL, it will be in the show notes at maccast.com. And if you are planning on going, if you decide you're going to go, ping me on Twitter or something like that. Let me know. I'd like to keep track of who from our community is actually going to be out there. And I look forward to seeing you there, or I look forward to talking to you on the next show. But with that, that is going to do it for now. I do want to take a quick moment before I leave and thank all of my show sponsors: Smile, makers of Text Expander, PDF Pen, Disc Label, also Text Expander Touch for iOS, as well as PDF Pen for iPhone and iPad, along with PDF Pen Scan Plus for iOS. You can check out all their great software over at smilesoftware.com/maccast. And Gazelle. Gazelle is the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. You can find out what your used iPhone, iPad, or other Apple products are worth at gazelle.com. Bandwidth for the MacCast is provided by CacheFly. You can find them at cachefly.com, and all advertising on the MacCast is handled by Backbeat Media. They are at backbeatmedia.com. If you have a comment, a question, something you'd like to hear covered on a future episode of the MacCast, you can send me emails or audio comments. You can send those to maccast@gmail.com, or if you prefer to leave a voicemail, you can call in on the listener hotline. That number is 281 4269-281-MAC-IAM-9. And if you need show notes, links to anything that I talked about on this or any other episode of the MacCast, you can find those on the website. That is maccast.com. And while you're there, be sure to check out the forum at forum.maccast.com. And if you're on social media, you want to follow me on Twitter, Facebook, check out the Google Plus community, pretty much MacCast everywhere, but Twitter is twitter.com/MacCast. The Facebook page is at facebook.com/TheMacCast. And you can check out the Google Plus community at google.com/plusMacCast. And that's the plus symbol. So don't spell it out. Use the symbol and you'll find us there. But that's going to do it for now. Until next time, I will talk to you all again real soon.